to the family therapist. But for this situation to develop, other family members have contaminated the situation somewhere along the line. Somehow, the family power base has been thrown off balance. Creating disequilibrium can scramble that power base. Shake it up so that the old tricks no longer work. Guilt induction, tantrums, playing the victim, and other manipulations must be disabled to create the opportunity for healthy change. That change can be accomplished efficiently and dramatically when the adults in the house, I'm talking about you and me, stop playing Patsy and start being parents. The idea is for you, the parents, to step up, start running things again, and set clear objectives implemented with a strong, shoulder-to-shoulder, unified front and a newfound commitment to consistency instead of constant waffling. Self-destructive patterns are put on a hit list to be eliminated, and new patterns are adopted. The child tyrant is overthrown. It's a new day in the kingdom with new rules and a new power distribution. Peace and serenity will be restored. Camelot lives. The dominant child will naturally be upset and confused about being tossed out of power. Good. That can work in your favor as parents. Children in these circumstances, regardless of age, will at first show frustration marked by extreme whining, temper fits, and so forth, but will ultimately seek security, predictability, and sameness. And you, the adult, can give them exactly that if you give yourself permission to parent with purpose and without guilt. Here's one piece of advice. Give your children too much love and not enough money. They can handle that. They will adjust. Remember, you teach people how to treat you. If you spoiled your children, then you have to be the one to unspoil them. It's essential to remember that the most important things you should feel compelled to give your children are protection, preparation for the world, and love. Everything else is a luxury. But you can't expect children to know that. They have no context to assess their status, just as fish have no concept of what it's like to be outside water. For young people looking at their circumstances, television too often provides the only frame of reference for looking at where their lives are or should be. And that is a major cause of many problems in families today. Creating disequilibrium, resetting the context for a disgruntled, complaining, sourpuss child might mean taking away everything that is not essential to their welfare. I'm not talking about deprivation here. Your children should still have food, shelter, and clothing, but feel free to cut out everything else to shake them up and get their attention. Even the things they may consider as essential as the air they breathe, such as MTV, the Internet, and Nintendo. I'm talking about even stripping their rooms of anything and everything other than sheets, a blanket, and a pillow if they are calling you out into a showdown over who is running things. Misbehaving and ill-mannered children should not enjoy a rich and luxurious lifestyle. If you allow that imbalance, if you continue to reward bad behavior, you might as well teach them to go on red and stop on green and then pitch them the car keys. That's not how the world works, and you must remember that your job is to socialize them and prepare them for the world. Research is very clear. Children who are overindulged are typically unhappy. They're unhappy because they appreciate nothing. You have to have some bad times, some downtime, some lean times to appreciate the good times. If you cheat your child out of the experience of the contrast, you're not doing them a favor. Their screams will be heard across the land when you pull those plugs. But I've guided more than a few families through this process of disequilibrium, and it has worked beautifully.
Now go to your printout material and find the section labeled Disequilibrium Strategies. Here you'll find more ways to shake the dis out of a dysfunctional family.
I can't stress enough the importance of you moms and dads out there working as partners and presenting a unified front as you begin the family shakeup. This is important whether one or both of you are in the home. It's all for one and one for all. for you two musketeers. No more bickering, backbiting, or team dissension. If you're a single parent and you use childcare, babysitters, or family members to supervise the children, then you must meet with those other guardians to make sure they're signed on to the plan as well. Shaking up a family requires thoughtful planning. Sit down and work out an approach that all parental parties can get excited about and fully commit to. Get pumped up about this. It's not some grim task you're about to undertake. It's an exciting mission to finally create the family that you've always dreamed about. And your children are going to be happier, healthier, and more loving. They'll appreciate for the rest of their lives that you cared enough to step up and take control. This will bring you and your spouse closer as partners because it demands emotional integrity. Each of you has to trust in the other. Each of you has to be trustworthy. You have to know that your partner can and will carry out the directives and adhere to the values and the guidelines you two have agreed to. No caving in. No cutting deals with the kids when the other parent isn't paying attention. No trying to come across as the good cop to your bad cop spouse. You must commit to this shakeup and to each other with all of your time, effort, energy, and resources. Once you've committed to the parental team, I want you to also dedicate yourself to consistency in your shakeup of the family. You can't waffle. Your children's behavior is shaped by the consequences it generates, so those consequences that you lay out and administer have to be consistent each and every time. If you're inconsistent in punishing a child's misbehavior, you invite rebellion and manipulation from the child. Children instinctively know if their parents aren't committed. They can be relentless in wearing down a weak-willed parent. You've got to be there to confront your child's unacceptable behavior and let him know it's a new day indeed. When you say you're grounded for a week, that had darn well better mean 6 days, 23 hours, 59 minutes, and 59 seconds. It had better mean that you will do whatever it takes to enforce that punishment, even if it means staying home from work, following the child to school, canceling a vacation, and skipping a dinner party at the boss's house. If your child has gotten used to you not enforcing punishments consistently, once you've become a determined parent, he'll do everything he can to fight the shift. If you stand your ground, it will cause the tremendous amount of planned disequilibrium you need to redesign your family system. It will get ugly, but don't confuse that with being unhealthy. As long as you and your spouse stand united and don't break and run, good things will begin to happen. You must be willing to adopt what I call commando parenting. If you don't commit to totally immersing yourself in the plan, you'll sabotage your child's chance to change, which may in turn sabotage your family's future. This isn't something you can play at. If there are two of you involved on a daily basis, you must both have a whatever-it-takes mentality. This is akin to an intervention, so Dad may have to take 2 weeks of his vacation time and stay at home with the children 24/7 to create a unified front with Mom. It could also mean that one of you has to quit working or downgrade to a part-time job to spend more time at home. You might have to drive less expensive cars, live in a smaller house, cut down on restaurant meals, and vacation closer to home. But shaking up this family is more important than all those extraneous things combined. The futures of you and your children are at stake. This may well be the most important mission of your entire life. Your child must be shown with 100% certainty that forbidden behavior will meet with the consequences you've laid out. If you don't enforce those consequences, I can assure you that you'll sabotage your child's development. You will confuse them. You will create anxiety and encourage maladaptive behavior. You will dig your own grave and bury your dreams of a happy, healthy family future.
In your printouts, find the section titled Disequilibrium Action Steps. This details your step-by-step approach to successfully create constructive disequilibrium in your family.
When you commit to shaking up your dysfunctional family, it can seem like a daunting and dreary task. So you need to keep in mind that you're doing an important, honorable, and exciting thing. This is an opportunity to create the family environment you've always wanted. It is by far the most important work you'll ever do. It will have long-lasting rewards in the form of children who grow up to be better parents themselves. Think of it this way. In shaking up your own children and creating a stronger family, you're contributing to the richness of the lives of your grandchildren and great-grandchildren. You're breaking a cycle that otherwise might well make their lives very difficult. The ripple effect of your decision will impact generations to come. Feel good about it. Throw everything you've got into it, and know that your children will be forever grateful that you care enough to stand up and do what needs to be done for their sake and for the future of your family.
Tool number 6, parenting in harmony. Put your house in order.
Two of the tools that I handed you earlier were for setting goals and changing your family power structure. This one is for cleaning up your family's environment to make it easier to focus on that restructuring for a more successful future together. As a psychologist and as a father, I know the challenges of dealing with important family matters against a backdrop of a household 10-ring circus. I know what it's like trying to have a serious conversation with a teenager when his cell phone is ringing every 2 minutes, his stereo is blasting in sonic booms at register 10 on the Richter scale, and Britney Spears is doing a simulated striptease on MTV. Many households today are chaotic beyond belief, and parents, your voice is simply drowned out by the overwhelming multimedia monster that floods the senses of teens and preteens. And you can't blame the kids, since we pay for most of the cultural distractions. And this chaotic external bombardment has contributed greatly to the current crisis in families. It's time for a clean sweep. In the cycle of one generation, rituals around the dinner table have all but disappeared in a flurry of fast food, big gulps, and hasty goodbyes. Instead of talking to each other and reinforcing behaviors we want our children to develop, we shoot for snippets of shared information while channel surfing. We own the remote control, but because of the internet, we have absolutely no control over the material our children have access to or even the people they talk to. Cell phones are a decidedly mixed blessing. They enable us to stay in contact with our children like never before, but they also create relentless interruptions, drug conduits for dealers, and party planners for teens in perpetual motion. Then there's the daily forced march to ballet classes, gymnastic lessons, soccer practice, voice training, volleyball camps, and baseball clinics. Each activity may be well-intentioned and designed to help our children develop their talents, but I wonder what all of this spoon-fed instruction is doing to kids' attitudes about life. The future doesn't look good for the next generation if this madness marches on. As parents, we have got to step up and take control of our own families. Where is it all headed? What could possibly be next? Whatever it is, it cannot be good if we continue to surrender to non-family influences or allow what I call net-sitting instead of parental supervision or even babysitting. It is true that a kid glued to a computer screen is convenient, and he or she doesn't bug you with questions and comments while you're watching some mindless sitcom, but trust me, convenient is not a good thing in this context. Your child being disconnected and out of control is not a good thing either. This madness doesn't have to continue. Families can be fixed one by one if parents set goals for success at home and commit to accomplishing them by shaking things up and restructuring in a healthier environment. I'm excited at the potential for doing that because I believe more and more parents understand the urgency of taking action. Let's look at three distinct areas in which you as a parent control your home environment. Number one, allocating time for priorities. Number two, controlling external stimulation. And number three, setting the schedule at home.
In your printout materials, you'll find a section titled Time Allocation. This will show you how to create a list that will help you bring the distractions in your home environment into clear focus. Next, Dr. Phil will explore how to control external stimulation in your home.
This tool comes with a special message. You do not have to compete with all of these distractions. The best way to accomplish your mission for family control is to insist on an environmental cleanup. It's your legal right to protect your home environment so that it reflects your family values. Regardless of what Madison Avenue would have you believe, there are benefits to living without the television on all the time or plugged into the internet every hour of the day. If you parents are going to reclaim the hearts and minds of your children, you must clean up the external distractions that dominate their lives. The sooner you start this process and the younger your children are when you change the rhythm of your life, the easier it will be and more profound will be the impact. We have become much too reactive. We allow our environments to control us instead of the other way around. As a result, our kids are often overstimulated. Children don't need to be electronically bombarded every waking minute, and they don't need to be involved in structured activities every minute of the day. They're not going to turn into puddles of flesh because they're not taking lessons, practicing a sport, or honing a talent. Don't be scared to death that your child might fall behind all the other kids. Stop trying to keep up with the Joneses by having your child participate in every extracurricular activity and private lesson known to man. We need to calm down and come together. We need to simplify our family lives. Children should have quiet time for reflection and creative flow, and they need to learn how to entertain themselves. Human beings are designed to follow life rhythms. Our minds require tranquility to foster creativity and focus on success goals such as those you conceived for your family's return to health. If there's never a quiet waking moment in your children's lives, they will never hear themselves. That could be a problem because they just might have some important things to say to themselves. That's why it's so important to de-stress your family environment. From the results of the action step I'm about to give you, determine what you can do to simplify things in your home. Then, look at what you can do to take the pressure off your children so they no longer feel overscheduled and overtaxed. If, for example, your mornings are chaotic because everyone is scrambling in different directions on different schedules, resolve to wake everyone up 30 minutes earlier. And maybe get them to bed 30 minutes earlier at night. Call a meeting and call for more cooperation and greater calm. Will your children resist? Of course. Will they roll their eyes and complain? You better believe it. But leaders have to lead, and as a parent, you have to step up. It's not always a democracy, and it's not anarchy. It's your family. You can decide when your family needs to start their day and how they need to start it. Parents can and should control the family's living environment as one step in taking responsibility for its welfare. It's also important to make certain you're not a source of the stress because you lack organization or because you're trying to multitask too much. It's well documented that children will reflect the mood and personality of their parents. If your house is chaotic, if your children are stressed, look in the mirror. You may be the source or at least a contributor to the chaos that interferes with their mental, emotional, and intellectual efficiencies. A child who lives in a chaotic environment at home will not do as well out in the world. To stop dysfunction of any kind, you must stop the behavior that supports it. In this case, the shredded family fabric at your house is not going to be stitched together until you clear out all the chaos, stress, and counterproductive communications such as fussing, fighting, blaming, and backstabbing. To begin the healing process, parents have to establish rules and boundaries. Again, good behavior should be rewarded and bad behavior should be penalized.
Check out the questionnaire in your printouts titled Lifestyle Family Audit. This will help you measure the lifestyle you've created and determine what you might want to do differently. Next, Dr. Phil will talk about scheduling in the family environment.
Time management is critical for all families. Most now live in the laser lane, hurtling down life's highway at the speed of light. 70% of families now have double incomes. That may mean double the earnings, but it also means double the stress. That's why we have kids booked with activities out the wazoo. But our lives require balance, and parents have to understand that children, and teens in particular, are tuned to nature's clock, not the clock on the wall at the gym or dance studio. You can't ignore the biorhythms that control humans' natural energy levels. In most people, except teenagers whose brains are still growing and who follow a later cycle that keeps them up at night and sleeping later in the day, the mornings are the most productive at the cognitive level. The body and brain have restored themselves and the toxic levels from the activities of the day before have subsided. Physical abilities tend to build in the afternoon, and there is a natural relaxing pace as the evening comes. But adults tend to run schedules according to their own body clocks or their own time constraints. This forces kids into unnatural rhythms that can mess them up. When parents clean up the family environment, they should be sensitive to the natural rhythms of their children. You don't play tag and dodgeball or wrestle roughhouse on the floor and then expect the kids to instantly transition to eyes closed and in bed. Scale the day down so your kids have quiet time activities that prepare them to go to sleep. Use that quiet time to strengthen family connections by reading to your children, talking to them about the day, and making plans for the next day's activities.
With that natural scheduling in mind, do the audit titled Daily Biorhythms and Schedule that you'll find in your printouts.
I think you too will feel blessed once you've cleaned up your family environment. If some of the suggestions seem corny or old-fashioned, that's okay. The stranger they feel, the more they need to be done. If it feels weird or unnatural to do what you know is healthy and productive, that should give you a clue as to how far off the mark your current reactive lifestyle truly is. I encourage you, for the sake of your family's future, to overcome those feelings and commit to cutting out the noise, turning down the volume, slowing the pace, and coming together for your family's mutual benefit. The rewards will be substantial, I promise you.
Tool number 7, parenting by example. Walk the talk.
The most powerful role model in any child's life is the same-sex parent. If you're the opposite-sex parent, don't despair. You are likely a very close second. Daughters primarily look to their mothers and sons to their fathers. And believe me, they are watching you every minute. You can run, but you can't hide. Children are very perceptive. The disclaimer of "do as I say, not as I do" doesn't give you a free pass either. You didn't buy that baloney when you were a kid, and your kids won't buy it now. Your children watch and learn from you from the time they come into this world. For better or worse, they observe, learn, and imitate your behaviors, your actions, your values, your beliefs, and even your expressions. It's a fact that children learn vicariously by observing the behavior of others and noting the consequences of their actions. They watch what happens to family members when they succeed or fail, and those experiences become part of their reference files for how they live their own lives. In psychology, this is known simply as modeling. Children are the products of their learning histories, and those histories are largely comprised of what they observe in you. The good news is that you are in a position of tremendous power in regards to influencing the development of your child. The bad news is that you are in a position of tremendous power in regards to influencing the development of your child. Your children assign you such power as their model of adulthood because you protect and nurture them, and you spend the greatest amount of time with them. The question is, how are you using this opportunity? I'm betting that you may not be consciously aware of even a fraction of that power. Research tells us that children who do not have role models have far more behavioral problems than those who do. Modeling is important because it is the primary way that children learn the values that they will carry for life. It is true that actions speak louder than words. Your actions teach them how to take personal responsibility for their own behavior, choices, actions, thoughts, and feelings. Observing that you live with passion gives them a passion for living. Such power cannot be ignored or neglected, not if you dream of building an extraordinary life for your child, not if you want your family to thrive at phenomenal levels. Raising perfect children is simple enough if you, as their role model, happen to be perfect yourself. Unfortunately, as parents, we are far from perfect, so we have to just do the best we can with a keen sensitivity to the fact that we are being watched in all we do. If you want your child to be neat, with a perfectly neat, tidy room every day, then you must be neat. If you want your kids to read, then they must see you cracking open and enjoying good books. If you want your children to learn how to express themselves, then you must engage your family in discussions. If you want your kids to be healthy and fit, then they must see you living with healthy food and creating a lifestyle for yourself and for them that includes regular exercise and family recreation. If you want them to handle anger appropriately, then you can't cuss out the guy who took your parking space. If you want your children to be honest, you must exhibit honesty in your everyday life. If you want your children to have joyful, well-adjusted dispositions, then they've got to see you acting, feeling, and living that way too. Of course, since you aren't perfect, your children are going to pick up on your imperfections too. You don't need a Ph.D. in behavioral science to know that too many parents in this day of fast-paced living and double-income families are failing as role models. One of the results of that is self-destructive behavior. Take me seriously here. Children are 3 times more likely to smoke if their parents smoke. Overweight adolescents have a 70% chance of becoming overweight or obese adults, and that increases to 80% if a parent is heavy or obese. An estimated 78 million people have been exposed to alcoholism or other drug abuse in their own families, and children of alcoholics have 4 times greater risk of developing alcoholism than children of non-alcoholics. The ripple effect of home violence witnessed by children is staggering. Children who grow up in abusive households begin to think that daddy hitting mommy is somehow normal. Abuse is a learned behavior. Its violent lessons get passed on from parent to child. How are you doing as a role model? When it comes to managing your own behavior and emotions, are you training your children to manage theirs? You have to be brutally honest with yourself about what you are putting on display. So many parents tell me, "I just have a bad kid." If that's your attitude, you've given up before you've begun, and you are ignoring your own ability to be a powerful influence. Part of the challenge here is accepting the truth that there are things that you've done or not done to contribute and shape them into being bad. I'm not trying to drag you down. I'm trying to get you to be real because you cannot change what you do not acknowledge. Let's begin to get real by recognizing that even in direct one-on-one interactions, you model for your child how to handle such things as stress, emotional upset, and pressure. The modeling is so powerful in these one-on-one interactions that your child will actually mirror back to you exactly the same demeanor and actions you are displaying. Behavioral scientists commonly refer to this as circular causality. Circular causality is a what goes around, comes around sequence. You tell your toddler that it's time for bed and he doesn't want to go. So he resists and fails to obey your directions. So you dig in your heels, ready for a showdown. He senses the tension and pressure and screams, "No!" You become frustrated since you have already had a hard day, so you turn up the volume. He sees what's happening and the fact that he's not getting his way. So just like you, he gets frustrated, moody, and throws a tantrum, maybe even kicking or breaking toys. Out of frustration and anger, you escalate as well and begin to scream, yell, or spank your child. This frustrates your child even more, the tantrum worsens, and he further resists you. By this time, you're hysterical. Your yelling and screaming intensifies, with the unfortunate effect of further escalating your toddler's bad behavior. He has taken your lead, reflected your tone and conduct, and not only has the immediate situation worsened, but he has filed away in his mind exactly how these situations are to be handled. By not being able to control yourself in front of an out-of-control toddler, you model, escalate, and reinforce unacceptable behavior. In effect, you're modeling the very same behavior you want to stop, and you're making each other angrier in the process. The good news is, if you can begin to stop modeling unacceptable behavior and model acceptable behavior instead, you will begin to de-escalate situations rather than escalate them. Remember, you are one of the top two most powerful influences in your child's life. If you have modeled bad behavior, you have done so powerfully. If you begin to model healthy, productive behavior, you will do so powerfully. What would happen, for instance, if your initial reaction to your child's misbehavior was to be a model of self-composure and self-control instead of a hothead? I invite you to drop your end of the tug-of-war rope. Trust me, your children will pick up your calmer response pattern and graft it into their own conduct. You must be the one who models calmness or whatever behavior or emotion is required in order to change the interaction. Once you start engaging in more positive and controlled behavior, you will literally alter the nature of your interactions with your children.
In your printouts, there's an assignment labeled Modeling Audit. It's followed by some additional reading material. When we resume, Dr. Phil will talk about modeling and mastery and modeling values.
I've made the point that when you model behavior, you get a certain result. But there's a second, very powerful aspect to being a role model that helps your children not only relate to you more positively and constructively, but also to themselves. If your child chooses to adopt behavior that they have observed in you, there is a higher degree of ownership of that behavior on their part because it was chosen. If you constantly preach to your child about what they should do and therefore assign them behaviors, they are less likely to own that behavior than if they had chosen to emulate it based on their experience with you. It is extremely important that your child perceive that their personality is their own, arrived at naturally through their own life experiences. I'm not saying that you shouldn't coach, direct, counsel, and instruct your children, because you definitely should. But it is important that you recognize that your behavior can also speak volumes and does not have some of the side effects that attempting to tell a child what to do does have. Thus, with the right modeling, you don't have to light a fire under them so often, because modeling lights a fire within them. Now, let's talk about modeling values. My father used to say, if you don't stand for something, you'll fall for anything. That is especially true when applied to raising children. There will come a time in your children's lives where they will be faced with critical decisions, and they will have to make their own choices. What you do now powerfully prepares your children for making those choices later. You teach them how to live by showing them how to make choices. Will your child learn from you so that she won't be lured into a car by a stranger? Will your son watch his father and learn to refuse alcohol and drugs? Will your daughter watch you and see that she has a choice to abstain from sex or to practice safe sex when she is old enough to handle the emotional aspects of it? If you've done your job, your child will have the courage and conscience to make the right choices when you aren't around. The lessons you model for them are so important. If you don't get a sense of urgency from reading this, I beg you to walk up to your child right now and stare into his or her eyes. The reflection you see is the adult your child will become. I learned how powerful parental role models are at a young age, though the lesson came at a very high price. When I was 13, all of my friends owned motorcycles. I wanted one too. But the truth is, we didn't have money for food half the time, so we sure didn't have money for some motorcycle. My only hope was to earn enough money on my paper route to buy a moped, which was nothing more than a bicycle with a motor stuck on it, pedals and all. When I raised the prospect with my father, he shot it down. But much to my surprise, he offered a deal. If you're going to ride a motorcycle, I want you riding something reasonable with enough power to get out of the way if you need to, not some moped. I'll co-sign a loan at the bank for a motorcycle if you can find a way to pay $25 a month. I'll find a way to pay $25 a month as well. I was thrilled, to say the least. Now I could ride with my buddies. My dad gave me two restrictions, however. Don't ride outside the boundaries of our neighborhood, and don't let anyone else ride your motorcycle, because we couldn't afford the insurance. Not 3 weeks after I got my motorcycle, I was at my girlfriend's house, way out of our neighborhood, just hanging out in the front yard. A buddy of mine came by and asked if he could take my motorcycle for a spin. I pitched him the keys, provided he just rode up the street and back. Off he went, not just down the street, but a whole 5 blocks away. Doing over 70 miles an hour, he broadsided a Buick Riviera and was flung 300 feet in the air, landing on his stomach and smashing his face into the curb. Even 5 blocks away, I could hear the crash. I knew it was him, and I got this horrible feeling in my stomach. Amazingly, he was alive but barely conscious when we got to him. He was rushed by ambulance to the hospital. That night, my friends and I stayed at his bedside, thanking God that our friend was alive. That's when my dad walked in. I was petrified. After he checked on my friend and made sure he was going to make it, his thoughts turned to me and the situation. He looked down at me, and I fully expected him to fly into a rage. Instead, he calmly said, "Son, I hope and pray that he took that motorcycle without your permission, or you're in a lot of trouble, and our family is in a lot of trouble." Here my dad had stretched the family finances beyond all reason to try and give me some light in my life, and I had irresponsibly thrown it all away and put us in great peril. I so very much wanted to be able to say, "Yeah, that's what happened, Dad." But I knew better, because he had always told me that two wrongs don't make a right. Lying to save my hide wouldn't help the situation. I said, "Dad, I wish it were so, but yes, I let him take the motorcycle. And I know it doesn't help, but I am sorry." My dad stared out the window for what seemed like forever and a day. I remember thinking I had never seen him look so tired or so old. I sat there on what I thought was the judgment seat, awaiting some dire punishment. His words to me I will never forget. My dad took a deep breath, put his hand on my shoulder, and told me, "Well, son, we'll just have to work it out." For all the times he had been emotionally unavailable, he sure came present in that time of crisis in a young boy's life. I know my father remembered this incident too, because a few weeks before his death in 1995, he told his Sunday school class about it, and how proud he was that I had told the truth when it would have been so much easier to lie. He made no mention of his own strength or sacrifice, only mine. That singular event, that lesson learned from disobeying my father and choosing not to rely on my internal compass of values, would prove to shape me and change me. It is no exaggeration to say that it was a pretty good wake-up call, certainly not one I would wish on any 13-year-old kid, but I know I created personal value from it. That character-building experience, however trivial it might seem to others, altered how I approach life to this very day. I recognize the consequences of not relying on that internal compass. How, if you don't, you may step blindly into disaster with potentially life-altering results. At the same time, I am so fortunate that my dad valued honesty. He modeled honesty, and I learned it too. He also modeled that fathers stand by their sons and that the loyalty of a father's love is not there when it's convenient. He modeled a depth of commitment to family. Life just goes better when you have the heart to be forthright and the commitment to be loyal. Here's the bottom line. Through your modeling, you can teach your children values that will serve as a framework for handling life, even when it turns into a raging storm.
In your printout material, you'll find our last exercise labeled Values for Your Family to Live By. It will help you get down on paper the values that are important in your family.
As a parting shot, let me emphasize that you are accountable for what you are modeling to your family. You have always been accountable, and you always will be. That is how it is. That may not be how you want it to be, but that is how it is. I encourage you to hold yourself to a higher standard. Be aware of the influence that your actions, emotions, and behavior have on your children, both internally and externally. Let me remind you that although you are the most important role model in your child's life, you are not the only one. There are many people in the world who will step in your shoes and become models for your child, good or bad, your family and friends, your child's babysitters, teachers, coaches, and the people that your child watches on television. Never lose sight of the stakes involved here. Your children are profoundly shaped by you, and your actions will resonate, for good or ill, throughout the rest of their lives. Be a parent who lives the qualities, characteristics, and values you would like your family to emulate. Let your life be a living example of what you want to see in your children. I believe that in every life and in the life of every family, there are a precious few moments in time when all things wrong can be made right, when all good things possible can be claimed. Moments when opportunities are either seized or missed and begin a chain of events and consequences that become the essence of our time in this world. There are critical choices and decisions that, when looked back upon as you stand at the end of your life, will be seen with great clarity as having been so pivotal as to have determined who and what you became, and just as importantly, what became of your children. Those events are unfolding in your life even as you are hearing these very words. Some occur in the blink of an eye, while others accumulate a little at a time as days turn into weeks and weeks turn into months and then years. A great gift of life would be the ability to recognize those important moments, opportunities, decisions, and choices for what they are at the time they are happening. A great gift of life would be to know what to choose, what to do, and how to do it at that critical time. My goal in writing Family First was to create a book that had the potential to become or at least contribute to one of those moments, one of those opportunities to know what you need to know when you need to know it. My hope was to plant the seed for that gift of life ability to recognize those important moments by raising your sensitivities to certain critical elements for the healthy development of your family and children. This is important so you can respond in a positive manner that will have a lasting impact on those you love so dearly. I believe that if you can grow your knowledge about these important issues, you cannot help but be a better parent. My further hope is that this book will be a call to arms, ignited by giving you what I personally and professionally believe are meaningful insights. Insights decisively stated in action-oriented terms so that you can translate them into behaviors that will create positive results in your family. These behavioral prescriptions are not intended to be a one-size-fits-all solution. But when you add your personal knowledge of your particular family and the personality, strength, and weaknesses of your children, you will achieve the customization of the plan needed for maximum impact. As you seek to grow as a parent, a question you must answer is, what is good information and what is not? These days, you are likely being bombarded by an endless stream of theories and advice about parenting and family dynamics. How much is enough direction for your children? Who should run the family and how? To spank or not to spank? Co-sleeping? Good bonding or bad karma? Potty training? When and how? Everybody has an opinion, and many times those opinions are conflicting. And what about me and family first? Is the information I'm giving you right and therefore worthy of being embraced? The answer to that question is up to you. I never ask anyone to substitute my judgment for their own. I ask only that you weigh carefully that which I have suggested here. If it will not withstand vigorous challenge, then you should reject it. I believe that Family First will withstand the challenge, and I believe in you and your ability to make a difference by using the concepts and action plans in your own family. But if you do disagree, then please seek answers elsewhere. If you totally reject everything I have said to you in this book, but it causes you to have a heightened sensitivity and awareness and to find better fitting answers elsewhere, answers that improve your family life, then I have been successful. This is all about results. Assuming you believe there is value in this program, your challenge is to consistently reorder and reemphasize your priorities and get excited about taking the steps to ensure that being a member of your family is a phenomenal experience for every individual. You cannot allow yourself to take the line of least resistance and live in a comfort zone of sameness. The difference between winners and losers is that winners do things losers don't want to do. Winners take action and take the risk of reaching for more. All the good intentions in the world will not change the course of your family without action. Winners are willing to tell themselves the truth about themselves as well as their family and circumstances. You cannot change what you do not acknowledge. You can be a champion in your family with the tools we focused on here. You can and you must. I have intentionally been very forthcoming about my experiences in my own family, because coming from a flawed background is not something to be ashamed of, but it is something to overcome. I have shared with you the necessary factors of a phenomenal family comprised of phenomenal people, and included specific behavioral prescriptions for creating that reality. I have talked to you about the special challenges you may face as a divorced or blended family parent. We have examined your family legacy, acknowledging the good things and actively working to eliminate the bad. You have taken a careful look at how your children most likely see you and learned how to shift gears to bring about the best possible results in your interactions with them. You have strapped on a tool belt of the power tools of parenting, beginning with a purposeful guidance system for pursuing your definition of success. You have learned to make communication a meaningful skill set instead of just an overused term. You have honed your negotiation skills to help you and your child to come up with different life plans that you can both be excited about. You have been vested with a powerful technology for creating behavioral change that prepares you to eliminate problem behaviors and establish desirable ones. You have been given the plan and challenged to have the courage to create a constructive disequilibrium in your family when the balance of power has gone askew. You now have a plan for fashioning the environment in which your family exists in a way that pulls for success, peace, and harmony. You have even identified specific action plans for creating their authentic personhood to ensure that they have a chance to become every bit of the unique individual they are meant to be. You have acknowledged the fact that as a powerful model in your child's life, Your actions speak louder than words, and you have only to look at your children to see a reflection of who you are and how you live your life. All of this work, learning, and preparation for leading your family should be at the core of your mission in this life. The time for action, the time for leadership is now. As you create the rhythm of your family, treat it with a reverence that sets it above all else. The thing about family, particularly the relationship between parent and child, is that there does exist this rare purity of identification, the ability to revel without envy in your child's success. Oscar Wilde, commenting on the small side of humans, made the observation that we all die a little bit inside at a friend's success or good fortune. But not true of a parent and their child. In a truly phenomenal family, each family member views each other's interest as overlapping. In particular, our child's success is our success. Family is the purest form of love and must be preserved and nurtured like no other. Someone once said to me, when you look back at the scrapbook of your life, you will not see in it people you worked with. That scrapbook will be filled with family photos. She was right. Family takes precedence over all. Think of two people, a fabulously wealthy artist or CEO or athlete, but a remote father to his children, a stranger to them. The second, an average guy, a plumber perhaps, or a bus driver, who never wrote himself into the history books, but who went the extra mile for his kids, always showed up, earned from them fierce love and respect. Which person would you want to be? To me, the answer is obvious, and this is not just a philosophical musing. It's an everyday choice. Your children go out into the world every day, whether it's their first day in kindergarten or at a new school after you've moved, their first time to compete in a spelling bee or a dance contest. They take their experiences of home with them. Maybe it's a Little League baseball game that challenges them or a mean and cruel bully at school. What will they say to themselves when life makes its certain demands? Have they been parented in a way that will cause them to go into the world feeling confident, worthy, special, safe and secure? Will they go forth with calm self-assurance and an expectation of success because they have been valued, loved, and nurtured every day of their lives? Or will they go into the world with self-doubt, feelings of inferiority and guilt or shame because their private reality, their home, is flawed and ugly? Will they worry about disappointing you and being judged when they experience the inevitable failures in life? Or will they look inside themselves for the strength and ability you have worked to implant so they can draw upon it when you're not around to help? You have within your grasp the ability to make sure that every one of those questions is answered in the right way. As I said as we started this journey through Family First, the love in your heart has given you the energy, and now you have the plan. Never forget that it is an energy and a plan that you need because there is a tug of war going on, and as a parent, you must never surrender. You must be willing to stand in the gap and be the anchor and the strength in your family. Your strong leadership will be your family's compass for their exciting journey through life. To this day, although he is long deceased, I still hear my father's voice in times of trial. Son, be the man God intended. To whom much is given, much is expected, and you have been blessed immensely. You can be that compass. I know you can, and it's not too late. My father's positive influence in my life was immeasurably greater in the later and sober years of his life, even when I was already grown and gone on to my own life. It truly is not too late. Beginning today, you must step up and without fear or guilt have the courage to say no when you must. You must have the courage to say yes when the risk-reward ratio supports it. Step up and make the plans and lead the way. I believe that the things in life that you will regret most are the things you don't do. Don't let this parenting initiative be one of the things you don't do. You can make your family proud. I know it. I absolutely know it. It has been said that our children are messages that we are sending to a future we may never see. That may be, but our children will see it. Our children will live it. Create them a chance by leading your family with passion and commitment. And when you do, God will smile.
Family First was written and read by Dr. Phil McGraw. Recorded on location and at the media staff in Los Angeles. The location recording engineer was David Ronnie. Studio engineering by Craig Sadler. Editing and post-production by Robin Wise at Sound Imagery in Sebastopol, California. Your announcer was Deanna Hurst. The associate producer was Suzanne Wetzel. Family First, your step-by-step plan for creating a phenomenal family, was produced, directed, and abridged by Jesse Boggs. This has been a presentation of Simon & Schuster Audio. Family First is available in hardcover from Free Press.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.